The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for being with me today here on the program. It is my joy to introduce to you the first time I've had this young lady on our program, Allison Ungaro. It's so great having you here and just being a part of this great organization that you lead called Created Gainesville. And for our listeners who don't know what that is going to be, that's what we're going to be doing, kind of unpacking the name and the ministry that goes behind it. And first of all, Allison, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation. It truly is a joy of mine to be able to join you and your listeners today and to share really God's heart. And of course, Created Gainesville's heart for lives impacted by sex trafficking and sexual exploitation.
You know, as we were talking before we began our time together here on the radio and recording this segment, it's so sad to me to think that, number one, we have to have a ministry like this, what Created does. But it's especially sad as we begin to kind of share what the purpose is, what you do, that it's happening in small towns. Gainesville is by far from being a small town, but it's we think about a respectable city, and you think that such things as human trafficking and others being more explicit have the more direct, accurate name for it, sex trafficking, where young ladies are basically, in many cases, kidnapped and basically sold into slavery. It's a modern day slavery. To think that we're having to even discuss this, it just boggles my mind, and I'm sure you feel the same way.
Absolutely. So I came to Gainesville as a student to go to the University of Florida, and then I ended up getting married right after college. We started our families, really began settling here and raising our family. And so this issue was the furthest from my mind and from my radar. But about 10 years ago, I started to hear more and more about sex trafficking and started to do some research and just some, investigating on my own, talking to people in our community, including law enforcement and other service providers, even pastors, and asking them, what do you know about prostitution in our community? What do you know about sex trafficking in our community? And repeatedly, what I heard was that, Allison, this is a bigger issue than most people who are citizens of our community understand. And the reason being is because it's happening in plain sight. It doesn't look like what people expect it to look like. And so it almost is a disguise right before our eyes that is happening every day in our communities. And I hear a lot, just a shock of, wait, I thought maybe more metropolitan areas, big cities like New York or Miami. And yes, sex trafficking is happening in those areas, but it's also very prevalent in our smaller communities, even our rural communities. And what leaves individuals more vulnerable in our rural communities is that there are fewer resources, fewer places to go and find refuge. And so at Created Gainesville, we're committed to serving lives that are here in Gainesville, but also our surrounding smaller communities. We really are the only service providers that have a focus on sex trafficking for about 7 counties. And so we just take it very seriously that there's a need, and we want to do everything that we can with our community to meet the needs of individuals who are hoping and praying and seeking a way out and the opportunity to heal and be restored.
you know, the issue, like you said, is far from being something that is relegated or, let's say, isolated in large communities like New York. And I think that, you know, the whole issue of prostitution, I would believe that many would have thought, like I did, that prostitution was almost a separate category. And when I first started hearing about sex trafficking, human trafficking, that almost sounded like something that would have been maybe coming from overseas, where people are kidnapped and then brought to the United States in some terrible way. But it's far from that. It's actually happening right under our noses. I remember living in Gainesville just a couple of years ago when there was someone abducted from a shopping area there in Gainesville. And it made the news that that person was taken right from a very prominent, well-lit, it was like, how can this be? And it's heartbreaking to hear these stories. And yet it is happening. It's happening in large cities. It's happening in small cities. And sadly, it's happening sometimes being driven by the parents themselves.
Right. And that's a point that I wanted to make sure that your listeners hear today, is that it's not just, you know, people being brought here from other countries, or even people being kidnapped. You know, you picture that big white van that comes by and swoops up the kids. That's rarely how it happens. Most of the time, it's from somebody who's very close to the individual, or makes themselves close and builds trust, builds relationship. It may look like a romantic relationship at first. It may even be a parent or a foster group home situation, where even another minor is coming in and being used as a recruiter to bring other vulnerable children out of the home. We see so many different scenarios, and I always want to preface that there are no two stories that are the same. And as human beings, we love to try to put things in a clean box that we can understand and study, and there's a formula and a pattern. Mm-hmm. The thing that is the most prevalent, the most common pattern that we've been able to identify, is the rate of childhood sexual abuse for survivors of sex trafficking. 92% of those who have been trafficked and involved in the sex industry have experienced childhood sexual abuse. Mm. And that's profound. We also know that almost 100% of survivors of sex trafficking, it began for them when they were underage. So before the age of 18, they oftentimes had their first trafficker. Some people may call it a pimp, but it is all in the same. Mm-hmm. Involves somebody who's under the age of 18, they are automatically falling into the category of a sex trafficking victim. Mm-hmm. And so for the women that we meet when we do outreaches and we provide restorative care for here at Create a Gainesville, 99% of them had their first trafficking experience somewhere between the ages of 5 years of age and 17 years of age.
Oh my goodness.
These are women that once were our children and they fell through the cracks. People didn't see it. Some of the women that we have worked with have shared with us that they tried to tell somebody, they either weren't believed, mm-hmm. or it was brushed under the rug. And so this is something that I'm so passionate about when it comes to this work, is making sure that we provide spaces where survivors and victims are believed, where they're heard, where their needs are being met, and where the room to really pause and breathe and regulate, stabilize, all of those things are put in place so that a woman can reclaim her life, and that what's happened to her doesn't have to be it. That's not the end of the story. That, you know, there's so much more.
You know, when you hear this, that most of these people that you are reaching out to and you're able to minister to have been victims of this, oft times that is by members of their own family. They were brought into the whole sexual abuse thing by members of their own family or perhaps by close friends when left alone. And you use the expression of falling through the cracks. That is such a sad but true depiction of what happens to these kids. And why do you think it is that when they finally do come around and they tell their story, why is it that they're not either believed or maybe listened to seriously? Why is that?
Right. I think that there's probably a variety of reasons. Sometimes, especially if the abuse or trafficking involves, for example, a mother's boyfriend. Sometimes it's really difficult for that mother to believe that someone that she let into the home mm-hmm. is now victimizing her child. So it could be denial. It could be fear. It could be survival for that mother of feeling like this is all that I have, this relationship that provides for me and my family. And so we're going to brush this under the rug. We oftentimes also see generational patterns of sexual abuse and sex trafficking and sex work. And so it becomes very normalized at times where families have had this as part of their legacy for generations. And so when a kid is growing up and this is all that he or she knows, it can be very difficult for them to identify that something is happening that isn't happening to every other kid in their classroom. Mm-hmm. It also breaks down that construct of, as human beings, trusting those that are supposed to love us and protect us. And when the adults who are your mom, dad, you name it, aren't protecting you and keeping you safe, what's to say that the teacher or the school counselor or whatever other adult is going to do the right thing mm-hmm. and keep you safe? So there's so many dynamics that we see. There's fear involved. There's shame involved of what if this family member doesn't either believe me or thinks that I asked for it or that I did something to bring this on. And so we hear so many stories from women that have experienced that, where they were blamed for what happened to them, not only not believed, but said, this is your fault. Mm. You did this, you brought it on yourself. And now, you know, you've got to kind of live with it. And so we want to make sure at Created that we're providing preventative, types of presentations with our youth and our young people. We're being invited right now to schools, youth groups, even right now during COVID, we've done some online virtual sessions with adults and children so that we can give individuals the tools to keep themselves safe, mm-hmm. to know that if these types of things are happening to you, that it is not okay, that it's not your fault, that it you didn't do anything to bring it on, and that there are safe places and people to go to talk about it. So that is something that's very, very important at Created, is making sure that we are doing our best to decrease the number of youth in our community who are vulnerable and susceptible to being preyed upon by traffickers.
How does one know, what are the first steps in most cases when you find someone that is being trafficked? How does the person who's talking to that person, how does the light go off that this could be a bad situation if they're just having regular conversations? How does that happen?
Right. So sometimes, you know, somebody who is actually living the experience of being trafficked may not self-identify, especially if there's a scenario like we were just talking mm-hmm. about has been normalized within mm-hmm. their social circle or their family dynamics. And so when we're talking to individuals at Created, sometimes we start just describing what it would look like to be trafficked. So we don't just use that verbiage. We start to unpack it. Have you ever had to exchange your body and any sex act for money, for clothes, for a place to stay, mm-hmm. for drugs? Have you ever been in a situation where you've been forced to do things that you didn't want to do? And these are types of questions that start to get to the root of what might be going on if something just seems really off. So when we go in and provide training, really our greatest, thing that we want to impart is that learn to ask really good questions that aren't assuming anything. Avoid even words like, are you being trafficked? But get to what would that look like? Mm-hmm. And then start putting the pieces together and helping that individual to start putting the pieces together for themselves.
How big of a role would fear in, let's say, girls that are in this scenario, they're caught up in it. They don't want to be in it, but that's the life that they're living, and I'm sure they feel trapped. How big a part is fear for their life? Do you find that to be?
Absolutely. That is probably one of the biggest obstacles when we're working with a woman who has just come out of her trafficking. And, you know, traffickers use all kinds of tactics to produce fear, and they don't even have to be physically present with their victim in order to have control over them, because the grooming process goes so deep in manipulation and fear tactics and even convincing that person that they're the only one who actually cares mm-hmm. for them. Mm-hmm. And if they were to leave, no one would take them. And so those messages over time, over and over again, and the complex traumas of being sexually assaulted 15 to 40 times a day, it makes it extremely difficult to come forward and report and even believe that there could be an out. Mm-hmm. And so for some women, it can take years, you know, of engaging with created in different scenarios, maybe out on our street outreach, maybe when we go into the strip club, maybe even when we go in and we teach our class at the Alachua County Jail. Sometimes we have overlaps where women end up in different spaces, and we get to continue to sow in hope that there can be something else, that safety can be obtained, and the journey of healing and restoration is available. Mm. So it can be hard. You know, for some women, what we hear is, you know, Allison, I know that I can't do this anymore. And I'm tired. And yes, I'm scared, but I'm done. And it's worth the risk to leave. And so when those moments happen, we want to be ready and equipped to be able to meet those needs.
I can't think of a greater cause than to rescue someone who's trapped in that kind of a thing. I had a chance to talk with Elizabeth Ameling, and she has a place in Orlando. It's called Letitia's House, and it's a similar type of rescue where they actually have a home. And it began with them being on a trip to a city, a major city, and found this young lady and actually began to put the pieces together, because this young lady's pimp, she looked like a very young 13, 14-year-old girl, as I recall the story, but was actually something like 22 and had been for years under this kind of a horrible lifestyle, and being forced upon her, being just paraded around and mm-hmm. Abused daily for years and years and years. And
right.
They, by God's grace, were able to rescue her on the spot and to see mm-hmm. her life unpacked from there and God redeem her. And my goodness, I can't think of what has to be simultaneously one of the most heart-paining things and yet fulfilling things when you see someone rescued and you see someone receive hope in their life again.
Absolutely. It is truly one of, I feel like, God's greatest gifts in my life to get a front row seat of God's mercy and his faithfulness and his pursuit of his children. And, you know, that he doesn't grow weary of chasing after us and giving us a way out of the things that are harming us and exploiting us and are abusive. And, you know, seeing through women's experiences of retelling all the times where they knew God was with them on the streets when they were being held at gunpoint and being forced to do ungodly things. They knew that God was with them and that they're alive today because of his presence in their life. I've never known a closer, more real and raw awareness of God's realness than talking to women who know that they're alive because of God's mercy.
Yes. And for that, and for that lady to come to that realization of scripture where it says his mercy, which has just saved her, are new every morning. And those mercies are going to go on redeeming and refreshing and cleansing her life from that day forward. What a wonderful promise that is for her.
At one point I would love just to go back to a little bit is, you know, even when we look at, you know, maybe a woman is in her 30s, 40s, you know, she's been trafficked maybe since she was 16 years old. There's usually a point if a woman has not escaped somehow or been found by law enforcement or found some way out that at some point her trafficker in the physical form will discard her and be done with her and look for somebody new. But what lives on if a woman does not have the opportunity to heal and be restored is that the psychological and physical and spiritual implications of her experience will now serve as her new trafficker. And so without even the physical person holding force, making threats, all of those traumas built up over time will be enough to keep that woman trapped.
Sure. The enemy is right there alive and basically telling her that no one loves her. There's nothing good about her. There's no hope for her.
Absolutely. And our message is that with God, it is never too late. And that has, like you said, his mercies are new every single day. And that his hope is available for her.
What a wonderful thing. What a wonderful ministry created Gainesville. And I'm talking to Allison Ungaro. And she's the director, the founder of this great ministry. We're going to hear her story coming up in a moment of how that she came to know the Lord and how it is that God put it upon her heart to launch this ministry to people, these young ladies that are caught up and trapped and imprisoned in this human trafficking scenario that so many hear about, but so little is known about it by so many of us. And that's what we're hoping today, that we can all learn more, that we can pray more, that we can give more, and that we can see God's mercies, which are new every morning for these people, really reach out to these that are in need. We'll be back with Allison coming up in a moment. This is Mike Gilland, and this is Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. I am on the phone today with Allison Ungaro, and Allison leads the ministry called Created Gainesville. You know, before we've heard so much already in segment one about just the horrors, and I do mean that word. I'm not using that word lightly. When a young lady is caught up in a trafficking situation at the age of 5 years old, a child, a mere child, and many of these that are sold as prostitutes, as they're pimped around, they're pushed around and doing these horrible things, sex acts. And you mentioned so many times, dozens of times every day, it is a nightmare. And it's something that I think a lot of us, we just want to run. We want to turn our head from because it's so unpleasant to think about. And yet it is something that's happening and we have to think about it to give the right attention and to serve these that are caught up this way who need and so desperately deserve the gospel message to be preached to them. And I appreciate what you're doing, Allison. I want you to know that. And I know that you have a, calling on your life to do this, obviously. How did you come to know the Lord yourself?
So it's quite a story, as I'm sure so many people have who are listening today. I grew up in a very loving family, a mom and a dad who loved me deeply. However, when my parents divorced when I was 3 years old, that changed a lot. My dad moved across the country and my relationship with him was inconsistent and sometimes not present. I don't hold blame or malice towards him as an adult because I know now and see signs that he was struggling with things I couldn't wish on my worst enemy. When I was 10, I got the tragic news that no child should have to hear about their parent, that he had lost his life to suicide.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
As you can imagine, it wrecked me. You know, I was 10 and going into my tween years. And I think for every kid, especially little girls, having their daddy is so critical. And so this, you know, impacted my life in ways that I don't even think I realized at the time. Or even let on to my loved ones. Mm-hmm. I held it in. I was a pretty shy kid and a reserved kid, and I had many concerns for others. And so for the protection of people I love, I would kind of hold it in and be like, I'm fine, I'm good. But internally, I was dealing with a lot. And really, what I adopted in that time were messages of being abandoned and being rejected, not enough. I felt different than my peers and felt ashamed to talk about how my dad had died when it would come up in conversation. Back then, I'm 42 now, so back then, talking about things related to mental health and suicide were not necessarily things that were talked about in the same capacity that they are today. And I'm so grateful that we've come so far to be able to, in a healthy way, talk about mental health.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, you know, people would have this response of an awkward silence, and even people that cared about me didn't know really how to respond. But today I know that my dad didn't take his life because he didn't love me or want me, but because he wasn't able to love himself, and hopelessness had set in beyond his control.
Mm-hmm.
I think really, because of this earthly experience with my dad, some of that carried over to how I view God in my life. My family went to church and I loved being at church, but I still felt like God was distant and untouchable. I didn't really have a concept of a relationship with this so-called Heavenly Father everyone talked about. So kind of fast forward into my teen years, my internal wounds manifested through unhealthy relationships that I had within the context of dating. Mm-hmm. I was starving to know that I was seen and enough and that a man adored me. I went about in all the wrong ways, of course, and I put myself in toxic situations and even dangerous ones. And as we will talk about my work today in anti-sex trafficking movements, there is a sobering truth that I fit many of the characteristics of someone vulnerable to being trafficked and exploited. I was desperate to find the love I was missing in the deepest parts of my heart, and to be able to really erase the lies about my value was something I was chasing after and didn't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
I dated older guys, you know, who further embedded the lies that I would never be lovable and enough. And so at 18, when I left home and went to college, and, you know, started pursuing just my identity outside of the home, I really started to discover who Jesus was. And, you know, even before I left for college, you know, I will just reiterate, I was, you know, surrounded by a loving mother And later she remarried and I gained an amazing stepfather. Mm,
that's a good thing.
Right, right. God's grace so many times over again in my life. I had loving grandparents and aunts and uncles and cousins. But I believe the enemy was having a field day on my life and my identity. I felt myself spiraling out of control and deeper in despair. And this was only intensified by an experience with sexual abuse that left me more ashamed, feeling dirty, and that life of mine was too damaged for anyone to love.
Mm.
And I honestly felt like God had turned his back on me, that I was unlovable to the God of the world, the creator of everything. That's what I believed.
You know, I was talking to Pete Allinson on that point, and he mentioned this father wound that so many people have in their life and how that, and he, of course, the context there is men and how that men have that, but everybody can have that, this wound that it leaves like a scar in your life when you don't have a great relationship with your own father, and that transcends over to a lack of relationship with God as father.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's so true. And again, you know, this reminds me that, again, that pursuit of God and how sweet he is and gentle he is to heal the wounds that others have placed in our lives.
Mm.
Sometimes intentionally, sometimes not, but that he's so good that not only does he want us to know his love,
mm-hmm.
but that he wants to heal the places of every other relationship that has caused harm. And that just leaves me in awe, quite honestly, that he cares that deeply about us relationally to him. So going back to leaving for college, my roommate knew Jesus, and she would invite me to all the like Christian campus groups and, you know, retreats that were happening and things like that. And I would kind of reluctantly go with her because I was still kind of living out my old self. Like I was in unhealthy relationships, but I kind of was intrigued by this Jesus guy and a relationship that people were saying were available to me.
Hmm.
And so it was this very conflicting time period in my life of like, oh gosh, like some things really have to change in my life. But before they changed, I had to heal. And so graciously, God started to put me in situations where either the topic that a speaker was talking about or somebody in that small group Bible study was expanding on their life and sharing their wounds and their sins. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I was like, oh my gosh, these people aren't perfect. I have a place here. Like I belong here amongst others who have made mistakes, who have believed lies, who have experienced hurts. And I had never been in such authentic community before with believers. And so I began this journey of pursuing Jesus. The word became alive for me. The scars that were there became exposed.
Mm.
And the balm of Jesus's love began just covering all the parts of my life that needed him. And were nourishing the things that I was searching for before and not finding.
How wonderful. God's forgiveness, God's love, God's mercy. It became very real.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's absolutely great. Friends, if you're listening right now and you're wondering who this is Allison Ungaro. Allison leads this ministry that we're talking about today. It is called Created Gainesville. And, you know, when you give that story, the Bible talks about how that we overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. And I asked Allison to share that because, you know, we can all identify in some aspect of that, whether or not someone has not had a great relationship with their father as you did not, and then the sad tragedy of losing your dad in that way. Maybe that part is not true, but almost everyone has identified with this tendency of trying to fit in their life, to fill their heart, to maybe, like you said, that wound that you're trying to fix that problem by looking for love, as the old song says, in all of the wrong places. And that is something that I believe everybody has done at one point or another. And that's something that God is so great about. His mercies in that area are new every day too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, this encounter with Jesus was at a really dark time, you know, in my life. And when we get to meet with women through Created Gainesville, we're getting to meet them at the darkest hour, perhaps, of their life. On a street corner in the middle of the night, you know, in a moment where there's shame and a woman expresses to us, I feel so dirty and just so ashamed to even have you see me in this moment. And to be able to speak over her what God sees, that he doesn't see what she's speaking out loud, and fears that we're looking at, you know, as humans and judging her, that God sees who he created her to be, and absolutely nothing can take that away.
What a wonderful truth. Nothing can take that away.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think too often we think that we've run out of chances, or it's gone too far and it's too late. And, you know, I was there, you know, I felt like, man, God probably does not even want to see or hear me pray to him. But it was, I could not have been more far from the reality that God was actually grieving with me in those points of pain, and that he was there with open arms waiting for me to receive his love. And getting to share that through our outreaches at Created Gainesville is truly one of the greatest gifts. To look into a woman's eyes, to see her face, to hold her hand, to be able to hear parts of her life, what she would want prayer for in that moment, her children, her health, that she has a safe place to lay her head tonight, that we can enter into those places with her and love her authentically with no strings attached, no expectations, no hoops to jump through, and just offer her that when she's ready, for love, support, community to be a part of, services to start the healing restoration process, that we're here for her, and that we will also embrace her with open arms and an open heart.
It's a picture of God's grace in action, and everyone who's a part of Created can share in that wonderful experience of bringing hope to people who are hopeless. And give us your website, if you will, Allison, for Created Gainesville.
Absolutely. So our website is createdgainesville.com. All lowercase, all one word.
CreativeGainesville.com. And my guest today is Allison Ungaro. We're going to be talking one more segment with Allison coming up in a moment, finding out a little bit more about how people can get involved, how they can be trained, and how this wonderful work of love and grace and hope that's being extended to people who are caught up in the human trafficking saga, that's all coming up. We're going to hear from Allison in just a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike. Glad to have you along. I'll be back in a moment. On the line with Allison Ungaro. Allison is the president, founder, and executive director. Maybe that would be the better title, of the organization called Created Gainesville. And it's createdgainesville.com as the website. You know, when people hear this, there's a lot of people who are moved. This is a very emotional topic. And I think, you know, one of the things that the millennial age especially, I so appreciate about, is the fact that there's a call to action about in so many hearts of millennials, young people, who really do and are wanting to make and use their lives to make a difference in this area where there is such social injustice as what we're talking about with human trafficking. And so when people hear this, when you are you're in a church or you're talking with a group of maybe civic leaders and you're talking about Create a Gainesville, how do people get involved?
There are many, many ways to get involved with Create a Gainesville. I like to tell people that there is room at the table for everyone. So no matter what someone's life experiences are or their expertise or skill set, that there really is a place for everyone to do something. Before I talk about our training, I would love to share our four-prong strategy for combating sex trafficking, because the roles that we have for people to get involved include these four prongs. So we are passionate about many things that Created, but something that we learned very quickly is that if we're not providing opportunities for young people to learn, to be safe, to gain tools for protecting themselves and others, that we truly are missing a tremendous opportunity to stop this evil. And so we have prevention as one of our prongs of outreach in our community. We also provide awareness in the community. So we go out and do presentations, educating our community about what this looks like. Also really challenging people to think about, what is their part in this? You know, if we're not looking at the demand behind sex trafficking, then we're also missing a huge opportunity to combat this and to stop it in its tracks. And so we love opportunities when groups and clubs and churches will have us come and talk to their people. And then afterwards, people will come up and say, you know what? I didn't put the humanity behind the pornography, for example. And what you said changes everything. It's not only about me and satisfying a desire for myself, but it's about somebody else's life that's being harmed and taken from them. So we value every opportunity to go in and talk to people about what this looks like so that they can look at their own lives and what they're, you know, taking part in or not taking part in, and also that they know what to look for. They know how to keep their neighbors safe and to look out for that child that's maybe in their classroom. The third prong is outreach. We do various outreaches in our community, going to the places where women are most vulnerable to being trafficked and sexually exploited. So that includes street outreach. It also includes outreach in a strip club. It includes jail outreach, where we go in weekly and teach a class doing Celebrate Recovery with the ladies there and developing an exit plan so that when ladies leave the jail, they know where they're going, that they have a safe place to land, and that they're not immediately vulnerable again to being picked back up by their trafficker. And then we also do court advocacy. So we go into the courtroom and we advocate for women who might have the opportunity to have rehabilitation as part of her plan versus maybe just longer incarceration. And so that's a big part of what we do as well. And that final prong, that fourth prong, is restoration. So through our Created Care program, we're able to provide women community. We have weekly groups that meet. Every woman gets a mentor. We also teach classes, life skill classes, job readiness classes, and every woman in our program has opportunities to participate in counseling, to receive psychiatric assistance and care, physical health care, dental care if needed, assistance with prescriptions and filling those. We really try to bridge those gaps that are there that may be preventing a woman from being able to move forward in her life and being able to stabilize and rehabilitate and start to build her toolbox so that she has more options in her life that can care for her needs. So we really try at Created to hear women and to lean in and take every survivor's voice as our guiding post, along with the discernment of the Lord in how we develop our program and how we grow our program. And so I love being able to share with people that we started with outreach. We had no services when we first began. Mm-hmm. And the reason was because who knows best than those who have lived this and who can tell us, if I had this in my life, I could leave this unsafe situation. And so with all of those answers of this is what I need to leave, we've been able to develop this beautiful program. And we're looking to expand upon it in the next year by opening our first phase of our residential program, which will serve women not only in Alachua County, but 7 counties that are around us, and possibly even women across the state and country who are looking for a safe place to pause, to have services available to her, to mm-hmm. be able to continue education and build her toolbox, so that if she was trafficked when she was 5 or 8 or even 14 and maybe education paused, that she can come back and restore those places of her life as well and be empowered to keep moving forward in her life and to keep building her toolbox, to build her resume so that she can start looking for jobs that are sustainable for her future.
You know, so many times when I've heard stories from people who spend time in prisons, they are more than likely to end back up there in that same place again. And would you see that same kind of thing for these that are, let's say, brought out or have a chance to step out and they find it easy sometimes end right back up in the same scenario again?
There is absolutely a survival cycle that develops for victims and survivors of sex trafficking. And it usually includes victimization, the onset of addiction to drugs, whether that was before the victimization or afterwards. It's definitely a tool that predators use to keep individuals caught. That other piece is incarceration. And then what will happen a lot of times is either that trafficker will pay the bond so that they can get that individual back out because they're losing business, or if the individual can't be bailed out and has to serve the time, the trafficker oftentimes knows exactly when that person is being released from jail and will be there waiting. And so we want to make sure that when we're meeting women in the Alachua County Jail, that if she's open to services and rehabilitation and developing a safe exit plan, that we do that together. And instead of that trafficker being there to pick her up, that our team is there to pick her up. And we pick her up from those doors and we take her to wherever that safe place is for her, where she's going to begin her journey mm-hmm. of healing and restoration. So, you know,
wonderful.
That's so key, you know, because you're so right. The vulnerabilities don't go away mm-hmm. just because someone was incarcerated. They're there waiting at the door for them oftentimes.
You know, we live in this culture that, and we hear this term often, the Me Too culture, where it seems that for years, our movies, if anything, glamorized the kind of lifestyles that cause women to go this direction or entrap them, and those lifestyles and those mediums are glamorized. It's usually not painted, at least not always, as a seedy or very dark type of existence. Are you seeing any difference with all of this recent, the Me Too movement? Is there any change in the culture that you see?
Some of the things that I see more so are just how social media platforms are being used for young people today mm-hmm. and how that glamorization that you just described of promiscuity and the sex industry as a whole, you know, is being glamorized. Even that pimp lifestyle is being lifted up as something that's almost like celebrity status for our men. And so for women, that same kind of messaging of this is what it looks like to be successful, to be wanted by men, to have men, you know, just dote over you with gifts and nails and hair. And this is the expectation in return, and that it's normalized as okay, that there would be an expectation for sex in return, and possibly with multiple sex partners as a result of that relationship. And so again, it's where sex trafficking for a lot of young people is happening, but not identified because it looks so normal. You know, they're hearing about it in music, they're you know, seeing it glamorized in the movies, they're even hearing their friends, family, you know, peers talk about it as though it's no big deal. And this is how you make a little extra money on the side, or this is how you survive. This is how you make it. This is the definition of a man, or this is the definition of a woman. And so for us, when we go out and present, we want to chip away at what society has normalized and start to really look at the harm that it's doing to our society, to young people. The harm that pornography is having with young people, that first exposure to pornography is getting younger and younger all the time.
And because of the internet, sadly, it's easier and easier to do it in private and not be seen, not be caught. It's a sad cycle. Oh, absolutely. My goodness. Our time is almost gone. Allison, give us the website one more time. And if somebody is listening, they'd like to come and maybe check out becoming a volunteer, how can they do that?
Absolutely. Our website is createdgainesville.com. And what you'll find on our website are stories of hope. We talked about a lot of the heavy stuff today, but I would love for you to come and see our website, see those victory stories of women who we've met through outreach, who have restored their lives, who have reclaimed their lives. Also, you can see all the different ways that you can get involved. You can become a volunteer. You can pray for our ministry. We need all the prayers that we can get. You can become a monthly financial partner. You can host an event and invite us to come and be a speaker or do a fundraiser for us. There are really just endless ways that people can get involved. We also have people who have a professional expertise that would benefit the women that Created serves. We have educators who might come in and tutor, attorneys that might offer legal counsel. We have a dentist who donates her time. So there really are so many places where businesses and individuals of families and churches can really sow some very valuable seeds of hope for some individuals that need it in our community.
I want to say thank you so much for what you're doing, and you're making a difference, and you're giving hope, as you said, to people who need hope. Allison Ungaro, Created Gainesville, thank you for being on my program today.
Thank you.
And friends, thank you for being with us as well. We'll catch you next time right here along the Shepherd Radio Network on Afternoons with Mike.